Today with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally Episode 6, Season 8. Are you enjoying it so far? We're enjoying it. We're doing some different things this season, I think. We've got a great piece coming up a little bit later on with Simon Davison, which is just fascinating, by the way. If you enjoyed the stuff we did with Jerry Freeman, you will love this piece. Some great stories from back in the day with Richard and with Colin and various other people. So please, please, please stay with us. You'll enjoy that bit before you whisk off anywhere. We've got, on my right, we have, as usual, Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello.
There you go. And over on my left-hand side, almost spooning, Ryan Champion, is Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack Bennion.
You must feel like you've got the wooden spoon this week because I'm at the top of the show instead of at the end. It's a bit of a shame for you.
I thought you were going to make some comments with regards to my performance last weekend.
Yeah,
to be honest with you.
I wouldn't be that cutting.
So it's Jack booking in early this week.
It is Jack booking in early this week.
All right, don't stick the knife in.
I just stop forking round. Right. Should we get the elephants in the room out now? Should we just deal with it? Right. We had a very good rally last weekend until we got to the final arrival control. And we as a crew made a mistake and I lost second in class on the Plains rally. And a very good result that it would have been. And we got a load of time penalties. And it was very embarrassing for us all. And for the next rally, we're not going to use normal time cards. We're going to use calendars. And we're going to install a sundial on the dashboard to ensure that we keep to time. There you go.
I like the way you were very magnanimous and said, you know, we as a crew made a mistake, but I lost my class position.
Yes. Well, yeah, okay. We lost our class position. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, we did. That's not too fine a point on it. But there you go. But mega rally, by the way, before we crack on, genuinely, the Plains rally, the quality of the stages I did last weekend was some of the best gravel stage rally mileage I have done for a long, long time. And hats off to the guys who at Rally for Wales who obviously are involved with that and everybody who signed up for that. But yeah, probably one of the most enjoyable gravel rallies I've done for some time. Anyway, boys, we're wittering on. Can you believe that we're already 2.5 minutes in? And so far, we haven't made any kind of reference to any headlines in MN. So I'm going to come straight to Jack, and I'm going to go, M Sport, prepare to use team orders, Jack.
Yeah, Malcolm Wilson has told David Evans that he's considering the use of team orders for the rest of the season. So he sees a very realistic chance of taking the World Rally Championship this year, the Drivers' Championship. And yeah, he said that he's willing to learn from maybe times before when he's not implemented team orders and it's maybe cost them championships in sport in the past. So he's looks like he's going to try and implement them for the rest of the year if they're needed.
Right. Does this take us back to the heyday of WRC, dare I say, team orders?
Something that's been around rallying for, well, forever, or around motorsport forever, hasn't it? It's certainly not something that is new. And when you go for a championship, yeah, sometimes it's necessary. We've not seen it as much in rallying. Being maybe as racing, but it's certainly been there over the years, and you know, I'm sure we can all think of certain examples. I mean, the one that obviously sticks in a lot of people's mind is Colin McRae being told to slow down in Catalonia when he looked like he could win the rally, beat Carlos Sainz in Spain, and lead the world championship into the Network Q rally. Colin didn't really want to slow down that day, did he? But it ended well, and he won the world championship. So, but it's something that's been around a long time in the sport.
But we haven't really had this era of I suppose of the number of teams and the number of drivers and things, have we, Jack? For quite some time. Did you see this coming? Do you think this was always going to come?
I don't know. I think you've got the ladle out. I think you're stirring the pot here, aren't you, a little bit?
I'm cooking on gas at the moment, mate. I'm cooking on gas. I think. Where do you think?
Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, where do you think that, you know, obviously they want to desperately protect Sébastien Ogier and his lead in the championship. It's very early on. We're only kind of a third of the way into the season. Sébastien Ogier has already got a new car. Now, is that new car being prompted due to the fact that he hasn't been happy, do you think, Jack?
It's very, very possible, isn't it? You know, I think that they want to give him the best possible opportunity, and we've, you know, we've heard how passionate Seb has been on all the rallies this year so far about how much he wants his M Sport car to be on par with the rest of the machinery in the World Rally Championship. And I think the best thing M Sport could have done was show that they're willing to match the kind of ferocity that he's showing, in the sense that, you know, he just wants to win, doesn't he? He's just got that want to win that is, you know, you get it in all the best sportsmen, that, you know, you can see it, almost see it in his eyes in a way. I know it sounds a bit cliche, but he just wants to win every single rally and every single stage, and he'll do anything he can to win the championship. And I think M Sport matching that by building a new car sort of will hopefully cheer him up a little bit as well.
Right. Is that a way to keep your number one driver sweet, give him a brand new car?
Well, I think, like Jack said, it proves that they're, you know, taking it as seriously as they can, and they're putting everything into it. He has had some issues, as we've talked about, on virtually on every rally this year. And will a new car rectify those? We don't really know that, but it does, you know, it shows their intent to really compete for the manufacturer's title this year, and the driver's title, of course.
Jack, something else that's kind of caught my eye in the news this week with you guys as well is the testing that happened. Mads Osberg was quite open and almost quite tongue-in-cheek when he was talking about testing on for Rally Argentina, and that's something that appears to have kind of poked the bear a little bit with some of the teams.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's new for this year, isn't it, that some of the privateer teams can test on the continent. So for some of the rallies like Argentina and Mexico, they're able to go out and do their testing there, whereas the manufacturer teams have to test in similar places like Spain, Portugal and things like that. So, you know, Osberg showed good pace on the last rally, didn't he, before he went out. You know, he was running right near the front and showed a lot of pace. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on. And obviously with the additional news now that he's going to be likely running on DMAC. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on. But yeah, I think this one will be looked at by the FIA, and I don't know anything more than what's been said, but I would presume that they would change that for next year, because it's not, although, you know, it's good to give the privateers a bit of an advantage, I think that's maybe a bit of an unfair one.
Right, is this one of those conversations that we had towards the end of last year, which is what kind of constitutes a privateer? You know, we know Mads obviously has had factory seats and things like that, and we were concerned almost last year who would kind of get the super license, in inverted commas, almost to drive these 2017 cars. Does Mads still fall into that privateer thing? I think not.
It's a grey area, isn't it? I mean, it is privately funded. But then you could argue that the whole M Sport team was privately funded. And I think it's, you know, as the rule stands at the minute, it's maybe not causing a big problem. But as there's more 17 cars out there, it could grey, you know, muddy the water even further. And what would happen if a full-time driver was to drive a private car, or, you know, it could get more complicated. So I can see that they want to try and crack down on... you know, on the testing situation.
Now, again, after, do you think the move, by the way, Jack, that the guys at the GIPCO One Bet team, is that the right title for Mads's team? I know it's obviously, is that the full title? I can't quite remember what the full title is. I'm sure one of you boys will put me straight. Do you think that move to DMAC was prompted after Argentina, or do you think it was going to come anyway?
That's an interesting question. Sadly, I can't really answer it, because I think the only people who know that is the One Bet. It's Gippo Car, Tony. Gippo Car.
Gippo Car.
Gippo Car, yeah. One Bet Gippo Car World Rally Team is the official title, I believe. But yeah, I think, you know, whether it was decided before Argentina or not, it's quite interesting, isn't it, that they've stuck to the move and gone with it. And, you know, I think a lot of questions that will be raised from seeing Elvin's performance in Argentina will be, you know, is this just going to be a repeat of last year, where Tanak was obviously rapid in Poland, but didn't really, you know, I don't think he really looked like winning any of the other rallies from memory. So, you know, clearly they believe that the DMAC tie has taken a big step forward, and obviously Argentina was clearly showed how DMAC have made a step forward for this year over last year. But, you know, it's enough that those guys have seen the sort of potential in the tyre to actually switch to it. So for me, it's just a sign of another step forward by DMAC, and maybe a bit of a leap of faith from that team, but, you know, hopefully they'll be rewarded.
I hope so too. Hope so too. A couple of things I wanted to crack on before we talk more about. Do you think we do a predict the boys for Portugal, or do we just let it lie?
I think based on our recent form, it's fairly pointless.
I think do we just let it. Jack, are you happy to just let it lie?
Yeah, that's fine. What do we know anyway?
I was just about to say we'll be singing for our supper, to be honest with you. I think if we put our, mind you, we don't all earn as much as Jack Benyon, of course, in the towers of MN and everything else. You know what I mean? Me and Rye be on bread and water anyway. So
MN's well known in the industry, isn't it, for its high wages.
Hey, you might end up in a soup kitchen. You got to be careful. Anyway, brands need Mikkelsen. Says XVW boss.
Yeah, I think this is one that was kind of discussed on Autosport and has been around as well before the Wednesday's publication date. But Jos Capito thinks that Andreas Mikkelsen's kind of like a key to the manufacturer's title next year. If you get him in one of your cars, then you know you've got a good chance of winning the championship. For me, I'm not quite sure it's as straightforward as that, because obviously it depends on the cars as well. You know, it's all well and good having three drivers, but if they're not driving the cars that are capable of winning the events, then it's a mute point, isn't it? So but I do take his point. It's very important that one of the teams takes Mikkelsen, I think, because you know he's the only driver out of the seat at the minute who can really, you know, we're getting on all grand here, aren't we, talking about Mikkelsen, but you know he is the only driver who's not currently employed who you would think could step into a WRC car and win rallies. So you know it's a no-brainer on that sense, I suppose.
Right, as Jack just said, old ground, but he does speak sense, doesn't he? Bless him.
Yeah, we've talked about this so many times, haven't we? Yeah, why is Andreas Mikkelsen still unemployed? Who knows? Go figure.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. Anyway, boys, before we go, we've agreed we're not going to talk about Portugal predictions. Although, I just want to pick up on one thing, Jack, just before we move on from Portugal this coming weekend. Chris Meek has warned against any further predictions ahead of us this week's Rally Portugal, basically winning there in 2016. Guarantees nothing.
Interesting one, this, isn't it? Do you think this might be Chris sort of deflecting a bit of attention away and trying to make his life a bit easier? I'm not sure, but I think you've still got to have him as one of the favourites, haven't you, for this event? I think obviously he won it last year in the Citroën. I still think is either the quickest car or at least on par with the Hyundai. So as long as it stays reliable, I think you know Chris has got to be the favourite for this event if you're asking me.
Right, four Citroëns out this weekend. Is it four Citroëns out today to gather? And or maybe three Citroëns or two of the Citroëns to data gather and the other two to push? How do you see it?
I think we always expected to see three full-time Citroëns. You know, what I mean by that is these three works cars, if you like. We expected to see each of the teams eventually with three fully-fledged works cars. And I think obviously, Khalid Al-Qassimi brings the Abu Dhabi sponsorship to the team, and Khalid does a selected program. But obviously, the more cars that are out there, the more information they'll gather. Again, we've talked about Citroën, and we've talked about them still having issues that are un-Citroën-like. But the more cars they've got out there, then the more development they'll do, pure and simple. But I think we expected to see three cars going forwards, and obviously we've got three Toyotas for the first time as well.
Do you think the terrain, the Portugal is it fair to say a slightly slower event with regards to you know outright pace over Rally Argentina?
Argentina obviously has its twisty sections as well, doesn't it? Particularly at high altitude, lower power, it's quite rough as well. But it'll be a good test. Portugal is always the rally where you know everybody says, right, this is where the championship starts. We know what everybody's got now. This is a true reflection of where the cars are at. So for all everybody talks about the unpredictability of the opening rallies and everything else, you know, we're really going to see where the cars are on gravel, and I think we have a pretty good idea of the performance of the cars anyway. Obviously the start of the European gravel season, if you like, then we'll really see who's at the races. But I think we've got a pretty clear picture, but I think it'll be a great battle.
and we will be watching. Jack, are you covering this event for Autosport? Are you there?
I'm not.
Tweeting away?
I'm not. No? I'm at the RSAC Scottish Rally this weekend, so I will miss it.
Conveniently, that's where we were going to go next. Scottish event, Scottish Rally. Jack will be up there covering it, and we're going to get his preview in a moment. Ryan and I have got nothing to add to it, but how many times have you done it, Ryan?
God, I have to think about that. I don't know, 6 or 7, something like that, guessing.
I think I've done it four, I think I've done it. Yeah, four. Yeah, it must be. Yeah, so we're gonna let Jack do the preview because we don't really know a lot about it. Jack?
Yep.
Scottish.
Brilliant. Yeah, this weekend is the RSEC Scottish Rally, as we've already discussed. It's the next round of the BRC and the SRC. And I think probably the big question is, can anyone stop Frederick Arley after he's won the first two rounds of the championship this year already on gravel? So it's going to be interesting to see whether anyone can fend him off. But I feel like the chasing pack are as close as ever after the last round, the Pirelli Carlisle. I thought Ocean Price was really unlucky to lose his handbrake. David Bogie was fastest on every stage on the Sunday, which was, considering there was a lead battle going on and he was fastest on every stage, that was phenomenal. And also Tom Kaye has been doing some work with Hyundai and hopefully has got that ready and sorted and no suspension issues for them. So, you know, I think there's 3 or 4 people who can really take it to Frederick this weekend. I think it's going to be a really good battle. And the other interesting thing is going to be to see how the event has evolved after a year. Last year, it's fair to say, it wasn't the most popular round of the championship. It was a one-day format and it was quite compact. The service park was quite tight. So just little bits about the event that didn't quite work to have both the major championships together. And combined with that, we've obviously had the Border Counties at the start of the year, which worked really hard to open the BRC with just 10 weeks notice to get a full event on. So you've got to think that the Border Counties is breathing down the neck of the Scottish for next year's British Rally Championship calendar. So it's a big event for the Scottish to prove that they belong on the BRC calendar, and they've made a bit of a change to their format. They've got a different service park in Lockerbie this weekend, and they've also moved to a two-day format with two night stages, which seems to be the kind of popular BRC format at the minute. Two night stages on the Friday and then a day of action on the Saturday. But the Saturday's still quite a compact day, quite similar to last year. Same sort of stages like Castlelaw and places like that. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the battle plays out. And I think I wouldn't be surprised, although I think Frederick is still the favourite, if there is another driver still at the top of the podium over the end of the weekend.
This is Absolute Rally. The Supercar and Rally Show blasts into Bangorondi Racecourse on Sunday the 18th of June. On-track action, displays and fun for all the family this Father's Day weekend. Tickets on sale through www.tsars.org. The Supercar and Rally Show, Bangorondi Racecourse, Sunday the 18th of June. We'll see you there. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And I was very flippant about, obviously, Jack obviously giving his preview there. The Scottish for me was always, I did it last year, and all the things that Jack just made reference to there, I can kind of relate to, some delays and things like that we experienced. 2 day event. It's a 2 day event based on the fact there's 2 stages on Friday night. Do you think that's important? Do you think that these events need to have, the night stages in? Because that's another way of giving the rally a twist, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good test. You know, I think nighttime rallying isn't something we're seeing much of anymore. It brings great character to the rallies. It does add another test. And ultimately, if we've just got 1 day British Championship rallies all daylight, then what actually separates the British Championship rallies from maybe a BTRD rally, other than they've been slightly longer? I think it is nice to see, again, a little bit more character in the rally. I mean, let's not forget that the Scottish rally used to be 5 days at one point. Wow. You know, you used to go right up to where the ski resorts up to Aviemore and right down into the borders, and it certainly covered the whole country. So it's a rally that's gone through quite a few changes over the years, but a fantastic history to the event and an important part of the British Championship.
Absolutely. Jack will be up there, and we'll be keeping an eye on what Jack's tweeting about and everything else. Are we just going to draw a line under doing any predictions for any rallies for the rest of the year, boys? Well, are we going to try this one?
Let's have a go. Let's have a go this weekend and see how we get on, shall we?
Okay, I'll go with. I'm going to go bogey.
Okay.
I'm going to go David Bogey to win. There you go. On the nose, as it were. Not that I know a lot about betting, but there you go. Ryan.
Based on his late speed on the Pirelli Rally, I'm going to go with Austin Price, and it'd be great to see Tom Cave get a full run in the I-20 as well. See how he gets on.
Absolutely. And last but not least, Jack Bengen.
I'm hopefully not going to sound like a cop out, but I've also chosen Austin Price to win based on the fact that I think the stages are a little bit more technical this weekend than they were on the Pirelli, and I think that'll suit the Fiesta better. So I think of the Fiesta drivers at the minute, the top of the pile has got to be Austin Price. So I'm going with him to win this weekend.
Do you know what, boys? And I agree with all our predictions. Of course I do. I still find it, and I'm not going to go, we've kind of touched upon this before, not one of us has made reference to Keith Cronin, and I still find that amazing.
He's I really do. I think he's getting there.
Go back pre-season, though. You know, I thought he'd be the man to beat. You know, he's the man with the championships under his belt. He's been and done it, and let's hope Keith gets into the mix, because we've seen his incredible pace before. You know, in other years, he just doesn't seem to have quite found the sweet spot with that car yet. So let's hope we see him fighting at the sharp end.
Absolutely. Right. I've got some other bits and pieces that I want to do. You could almost dare say any other businesses. We've had an any other business sent to us, boys.
Oh,
are you ready for this?
Don't know how I feel about that.
It's from Marty, who I'll read the email as we got it. Hello. Exclamation mark.
Hello.
Hello. There you go. Say hello to Marty. Brian.
Hello. Hello, Marty.
Yeah. Thank you. I have, in reverted commas, any other business question for you that you might find interesting. Mads Osberg, Andreas Mikkelsen, Marco Martin, Juha Hänninen, Alexei Lukyanuk, and Oit Tanak are all winners of a certain rally. Can you name that rally?
Oh, that's a good question. Can you go for him again, Tony? Sorry.
Mads Osberg.
Yeah.
Andreas Mikkelsen, Marco Martin, Juha Hänninen, Alexei Lukyanuk, and Oit Tanak.
Is it the Latvian rally?
Incorrect. Ryan Champion?
Well, I read the email, so you might as well go with this.
Is it the Estonian?
It is a rally in Estonia.
Oh, it's not the main ERC Estonian rally.
It's a Saaremaa.
Ah, okay.
Which is the 50th rally coming this year. I know Tanak has said in Estonian media that he's working to be at the start in an R5 car. The event takes place at the island where Oit is from. So there you go. So Marty, thank you so much for sending in any other business. Boys, have you got in any other business this week before I do my other bits of news, or shall I do my other bits of news?
Well, I've got another any other business, but you're happy to do your news first.
I'll do my newsy stuff very, very quickly. Congratulations to our guest last week, Sara Williams, a steady 46th overall on Rally Antibes. It looked like a monumental event. We've got Niall Burns, who was co-driving for the Abu Dhabi junior team, on at the end of the podcast, who was talking about the rally as well. And well done, Sara. It would look like a bit of a battle, and we know Oshan was over there.
She lost 6 minutes with the puncture as well, I think. So
yeah, absolutely.
Good result given that.
Yeah, if you would have took that 6 minutes out of it, she would have been far further up. But I know she went through the mill a little bit. But we just thought we'd revisit that anyway. And the other thing I wanted to mention as well, I can kind of talk about it a little bit now. You guys have put a piece in this week, Jack, and I know it's been the best unkept secret for a while, but MEN have built a new Proton R5 car, which is being talked about, I think, for like the last 5 years. Chris has been working on this project, so it's actually quite nice to see it in the flesh, as it were. And hopefully, I know Chris is quite confident. I think it's got a very similar footprint to what the Hyundai i20 is, from the last conversations I had with them about it. So all being well, we'll see MEN and Proton back in the WRC in 2018. Now, one other thing I wanted to mention, and I'm surprised that Ryan Champion is not doing this event. The RAC Rally 2017, the route is announced. a 300-mile event, which will be the longest GB for 22 years. Ryan Champion, why are you not doing this epic rally?
Because I haven't got a spare £10,000 sat there.
Okay, that's a fair enough question, but fair enough point. Jack Bennion.
Don't ask me why I'm not doing
this.
Bennion hasn't raised the budget yet. That's why we're not doing it.
Would you really want me to co-drive on the RAC rally? Are you insane?
What could possibly go wrong?
You'd be better off setting fire to your 10 grand than even starting the event.
Boys, Ryan made reference to this before. Classic rallies, 5 days. You know, the Scottish. This is a monumental rally in terms of rallying over here now in the UK. It's a 4 day rally, taking in some classic stages, both in England, Scotland, and Wales. First time they've managed to stretch it out. It's come back after a sabbatical, hasn't it, Jack? The rally, and it seems to be attracting. Well, I think they've already had people paid their entry and quite happy to just go and turn up and do the rally.
Yeah, they've already got reserves for the event, and they've had reserves for the event for quite a while now. So it's going to be interesting to see who those names are on the entry list, isn't it? I know there's a lot of people out there and some maybe new names to the event. You know, I know Tom Cave was talking about doing it a while ago and hoping that he'd be able to get it together. And, you know, we've seen people like Gwyndaf Evans do it in the past and things like that. So it's going to be really interesting to see which names actually turn up on the entry list. And Steve Perez is hoping to do it as well, I think. So, you know, is he allowed to bring the Stratos out in that event? I'm not actually sure, but it'd be amazing to see that car on the event for sure.
There you go. Right. Any other business, boys? I haven't really got one this week. I just kind of wrapped it up into three little pieces there. So I'm out, basically. So we had Ryan's as a bit of a build-up last week. So we'll go to Jack Bennion's first.
Oh, lovely. Mine's, I'm afraid you might be a bit bored by mine. It's a little bit, maybe a little bit of a PR exercise from a journalist, which is odd. But I just wanted to point to the fact that MN has launched, done a soft launch of its new website.
Wow.
Which kind of launched quietly last week for good reason. And that's because we've still got quite a bit of testing to do on the website, but it is active. It is up there, and all of the content which you may or may not like in the paper is represented in some way, shape or form on the website, and the address is beta.motorsport-news.co.uk. and if you want to read my Scottish preview from the paper this week, and there's a kind of a rejigged version on the website, there's also historic news, rally news, hot rods, racing and all that kind of stuff that you don't really want to talk about on this podcast. So just a note from me, please go and check it out, and please report back any bugs that you see with it or anything like that. So when we do finally launch the finished website, it'll be as perfect as possible and hopefully ready to go.
That website just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
The beta bit, maybe not. It's not. At least it's not lanciabeta.motorsport-news.com because it'd fall apart in about 3 seconds.
I see what you did there. Ryan Champion?
A couple of things, I guess. I mean, firstly, like you said, Sarah had a good run in France. And when she said that, you know, it covered some of the stages from the Monte Carlo rally, she didn't actually tell us that she was doing the Col de Torini, which is pretty cool. One thing that a few people have probably picked up on social media this week is it looks like there may be an Opel R5 revealed in Portugal, which will be interesting to see. So, you know, there's been rumours of Opel coming in with an R5 car. Chris Ingram desperate to get his hands on an Opel R5 car. So that'll be interesting to follow that one. And just picking up really on what you were talking about earlier with Sebastian Ogier getting a new car for Portugal. I just had a quick look to see what the other teams were doing, and obviously Tanak and Elvin Evans, they're keeping their existing cars for Portugal. Thierry Neuville and Hayden Padden are both getting brand new cars for Portugal, having used the same cars on all the previous rallies. Danny Sordo is using his existing car, but both Toyota and Citroën have been rotating their cars through the rallies, and actually the likes of Jari-Matti Latvala and Chris Meek have already used three different cars this year. So a little bit of a different tactic from the teams, some using the same all the way through, some rotating them. That's a little bit of a roundup on the new chassis.
I was just about to say, I'd never thought about that. I think we spoke about this last week. You are Martin Holmes in the waiting there, aren't you? You're going to be able to reel this stuff off the way he does with his registration plates.
Yeah, well, he's probably got a lot to answer for, really. It's years of reading the Pirelli World Rally books and seeing what registration went where that probably started it, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Right, boys, we're going to go to a little break. We're going to come back with Simon Davison, as I mentioned to you at the top of the programme. Jack, you're off to Scotland.
I am.
Okay, the noon.
I won't try and pronounce that.
And don't forget your penny. You never know. You might be called into the kitchen to do some breakfast or something like that, the B&B. Where you stay, you know, just
I know Ryan refers to me as the whipping boy, but your jokes, Tony, are starting to grate on me now.
Really?
Oh, that, well, like that a cheese was a grater, cutting, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was.
There's just so many barbs flying around this podcast that I think it's time to end.
It's time to get out of the kitchen.
I was just, all I was doing, heat, right, clearly. I was just putting a little bit of salt and pepper on the podcast. That's all I was trying to do, Jack. Don't take it so personally, okay. Jack. All right, cool. Folks, we're going to go to a little break and then we're going to come back with Simon Davison.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And like we always try to do on Absolute Rally, I keep on going on about this. We try to have a thread running through all the programs and Pace Notes, of course, without them, we wouldn't be here. I've been doing these features on cars and just by sheer virtue of Ryan and I going back and forth with regards to some of the cars they've been reviewing, a Golf GTI was mentioned and it was from the junior Volkswagen team from the British Rally Championship way back when. It would be rude of me to mention the years, but I'm sure Ryan will very, very shortly. The man who drove that car, or certainly the English car, the English entry in that championship was Simon Davison. And for the first time, and again, I always say this, hopefully not for the last time, Simon, welcome to Absolute Rally.
Welcome. It's a pleasure to be here. It's fun.
Good. Now, Rye is armed with lots of facts and figures, stuff you probably can't even remember.
I'm fairly certain that's absolutely right. I won't remember anything, but I was just about to go online and see if I could find anything, but I'm hoping Ryan's done his homework.
Yeah, well, I'll come to the Golf in a minute, but before we get to the Golf, Simon, where did it all start? I mean, I remember RS Turbos. I remember you doing the One Make Championship against Phil Wilkes, Guy Wilkes' dad. But where did it kick off before you got into the RS Turbo even?
Well, you've kind of hit the nail on the head there, Ryan. I mean, I had a friend, Les Ryder, who I went to school with, and he had a rally car, and I didn't even know what a rally car was, but it sounded quite exciting, and it was a Hillman Inn. And I managed to talk him into bringing that down. My father had a transport company, so we had like a depot where we could tear around in this little Hillman Inn. So I talked my mate into bringing it down there, and we kind of soon fathomed out that he was probably better off in the passenger seat rather than the driving seat, and kind of went from there. But from that, we had a couple of rallies in that with not really much success because it kept breaking. And then a friend of mine, John Brown from DJV Engineering, I don't know whether you remember, but he was like a mutual friend and he had an RS 1800. And to me, he was a bit of a superstar. And it was him that got me, who talked me into doing the Escort Turbo Championship. So I guess, I ended up in the Escort Turbo Championship. It was really almost the first thing I did, and I was doing national rallies. I kind of missed the local bit out, ended up doing national rallies. I didn't even know what a national rally was, but that's kind of how it all started.
And then you moved on through, I remember the Black Mark 1 Astra, and then suddenly you found yourself sort of in I think in two cars in the same year. You were in a David Sutton Golf and a Nissan 240 RS, which was a pretty exciting car at the time.
Yeah, you missed a bit out, actually. You reminded me of some funny stuff there. Well, firstly, when I actually bought that Black Astra off, I'm not sure how much of this I should tell, but I'm sure John won't mind, but I bought it off a chap called John Martin, and he was in prison for doing something with cars at the time. So I had to deal with his wife, so I remember like a price was mentioned, it was like 12 grand or something. I said, well, what about 11? And his wife said, well, I'll see him. I'm visiting him on Friday. And but like, I had to wait a week, and he came back and said, no, he wants 12. And I thought, well, I'm just going to go and talk. But that was a fantastic car. And oddly enough, it was Francis Tuttle. I went to see his Volkswagen Golf. And he said, if you really want a car that's going to win something, Simon, you should go and buy John Morton's Astra, because it's way better than this car that you're looking at of mine. So I've got the lot of Francis Tuttle for, and I ended up driving that black Astra, and I won the championship in that. And then it was the Volkswagen Junior Rally Team. And that year, actually, Ryan, I think your history is better than mine. I was driving that, and I was driving the 240 RS in the Open Championship. So, yeah, that was a great year, because I managed to get that Volkswagen drive and let loose in this monster of a Nissan to do the Open Championship as well. Lots of fun.
Yeah, I imagine it was. You know, it was obviously Group B times, and it was when the championship was obviously very big. It must have been great to be part of it in an exciting car like that as well.
It was fantastic. I'll tell you what was. I just so remember. I've never driven a rear-wheel drive car before. I suppose I could cast my mind back to the Hillman Imp, but I'm not really sure that counts. And I've never driven a left-hand drive car before, and I've never driven a Group B car before with such an immense amount of power compared to what I was used to at the time. So there's a lot to kind of get used to. And at the first rally, I don't know whether you remember, but it was that National Breakdown Rally, and it snowed like you wouldn't believe. So I'm in this monster of a car. I remember going around the first stage, which was in some stately home somewhere or something like that, Yorkshire, where your neck of the woods, Ryan. I suppose my neck of the woods, really, a bit south for me. But I spun this Nissan 240 RS, and it felt like I was in the Titanic. It was that long, like the length of the car. I remember it started to spin, and there was little I could do about it. I was on snow and ice in this beast, and it just seemed to take forever to go through this 360-degree spin. And I felt like I was in the longest car in the world, but luckily it kind of did its 360, and off we went on our merry way. But it was a baptism of fire, that's for sure.
Now, like you said, alongside that, you drove the Golf, the car that we're talking about that was featured in Pace Notes magazine. You had a couple of years in the Golf, and you know, to be part of the David Sutton team must have been interesting at the time. And there was a car from England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales, is that right?
Yeah, it was, yeah. It was a lot of people were making the jokes as an Englishman, Irishman, Scotsman, Welshman, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, no, they were great guys. The Robin and Callum and Steve Davis, and we had great fun. I mean, it was a great competition the way they held it. We all had to get interviewed, and you know, we kind of all had to tick a lot of boxes. But it was a fabulous year. Volkswagen really looked after us well. It was just a dream come true to drive for David Sutton, such a character. We clashed heads a few times, needless to say, but he knew how to put me straight back in my box when I tried to get out of it. And it was a lot of fun driving for a professional team, you know, like and a legend such as David Sutton for a manufacturer. So yeah, it was great times, happy days.
And you moved from one legend of a team manager to another, because you went from David Sutton to Des O'Dell.
I did. It was excellent driving for Des. It was probably, that was in the Peugeot. I guess that's probably the most fun I've had, I think, because I felt I'd kind of come of age of a driver, and I could more or less drive at the limit all the time, relatively safely. But I remember Des, when we were kind of being hired, if you like, or I was trying to get the deal. I can't remember how it came about, but I was at the Peugeot factory, and he insisted that we went to the production line, and he said, I want you to drive this car flat out all the time, he says, because we can build cars much faster than you can crash them. And great, because everybody up until it, oh, steady away, you know, pick your lines, drive smoothly, all the rest of this nonsense. And Des just sort of had, and I let the leash off. Go on, son, go and have a go. And that's what we did, and it was great fun. Great manager. Personalities, you say, lots of fun. He did find everybody, that's what he used to find. Oh, if it wasn't for me, there'd be no Henry Toivonen. If it wasn't for me, there'd be no whoever it was. But he's a legend, superstar, lots of fun.
Now, your driving career, mainly in the British Championship, sort of led on to a second career for you in the World Rally Championship, didn't it? I mean, you were good friends with Colin McRae, but then you sort of found yourself helping a young Englishman called Richard Burns.
Yeah, he rang me up. He rang me up one day and he said, "Hello, I'm Richard Burns." And I kind of, I'd obviously heard of him. It was fairly early on in his career. And I think he kind of invited himself round to my house. And this is when he was I don't know what he'd have been driving. Probably his, oh, I can't even remember. Anyway, he's kind of called me up and we immediately hit it off. And I was kind of honoured that some young Englishman, I've always been really keen on chatting to and helping and bringing on young talent. And it was ace to have somebody like Burnsy knock on my door. And I do remember, and I'm sure I'm safe sharing this, but I remember when he first signed with Subaru, and I think I was one of the first calls that he made. He said, "I've just signed for 3 years for the Pro Drive team." I said, "Come on then, let's have it." He said, "Year one, 25 grand. Year two, 50 grand. Year three, 75 grand. And I'll be doing the Asia Pacific like by the middle of year two, year three." And like, we just could not believe somebody was prepared to pay this amount of money to let you go and drive around in the rally car. That was it. And we celebrated for weeks. Obviously, it was a fraction of what he was, to earn. But yeah, no, I remember that like it was yesterday. And then after a while, he talked me into kind of out of retirement, if you can call it that, to go and do his gravel notes in Asia Pacific, and that was just start of some fantastic adventures. It was great fun.
Well, just as you talk about Burnsy earning money, I'll bring Tony in on this. One of the things I always remember about coming round to your house, Simon, was that your house in Maidenhead, everybody had to have their height marked on the wall. And and there was all these different heights and all these famous people that came to visit. But about 6 foot above everybody was a little mark saying Burnsy's pile of money.
Right, yeah, that was funny. Yeah, forgot about that. And, well, there was about three or four marks because it was like Burnsy's pile of money 2001. Please see upstairs. I actually wish I'd cut that piece of wall out and kept it, or even taken a photograph or something. But yeah, that was right. Yeah, and it was. I mean, it was just a joy watching that happening with Burnsy, and just watching him getting better and better, and just watching him not only drive a car like we could only ever dream of, but to print money like we could only ever dream of as well. But it was worth every penny. It's great value.
And as well as obviously you were helping Burnsy at the time, but that brought you into contact with a young co-driver at the time, who again is sadly lost to us, Beef, Michael Park.
Oh, brilliant fun. Honestly, I've never felt so humble in all my life. When I was, if I got out of control in the car, he would just, I remember him saying, "Sort it out, you cabbage." So I'd be like, I'd be hanging on to this car, because I mean, you're not supposed to go very fast gravel noting, but every now and again, you get a chance to let the leash off a little bit. And I can't remember, well, it happened on many, many occasions, and he just used to sit there laughing at me. But I just remember I'm like fighting it because I'd fallen off the road and I'm trying to bounce through all these ditches and get back onto the road. And he just, yeah, "Sort it out, you cabbage. When you're ready, I've got another pace note for you." But we just had such a laugh, honestly. I mean, well, and doing the gravel notes, as you probably know, getting up at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, or on Hong Kong, Beijing, we were even getting up. It felt like before we went to bed, but it was like the same day. I remember getting up at 11:30. But Jesus, not even tomorrow yet. And we're having to get up already. And of course, we went through all of that together. And we used to hate it when Burnsy would retire and then we would have to go and work for someone else. I mean, it was like, you know, I mean, we're talking about Tommy Mackinnon and legends with, I'm sound spoiled rotten here, but honestly, when your best mate's kind of fallen out the rally, the last thing you want to do is kind of go back to work and get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. But we had some great adventures, and I miss him dearly, because I mean, we spent 6 years together, I think, in that car. You kind of have to be close if you spend that long together.
And like you said, looking back, I mean, it was a fairly incredible time to be involved in the World Rally Championship, wasn't it? With Richard, with Colin, with the Mackinnons, the Sykes at this world. It was an amazing era.
It was, and you can, you know, we were hanging around with all of them all the time. It was me, Robert Reid, Beef and Burnsy kind of travelling the world for years and years, it kind of feels like. I'm not sure exactly how long it was, 5 or 6 years or something. But, you know, just travelling every corner of the globe, and as you say, hanging out with your Sciences and your McCrays and your Mackinnons, and, you know, and Burnsy was right in amongst it, and with Colin being there as well, there was always plenty of banter between the two. And they were best of friends, by the way. They they were different as chalk and cheese. But and there was obviously a massive rivalry there. But off camera and off stage, they were best friends. I've had holidays where we've all been together. And different personalities altogether. But yeah, it was a pleasure to be in that company in that era of rallying, as you say, because it was probably one of the best eras that rallying's ever seen. Certainly if you're from Great Britain.
I think there's an era as well where it's probably good that there wasn't camera phones around, Simon.
yeah. Definitely. When we hang up from the official interview, I might tell you some of the unofficial stories. I'll try and think of the odd one that might just be airable in the meantime. But that has been a lot of good fun. But yeah, you're right. Just as well there was no camera phones.
We had ex-Pirelli man Jerry Freeman on for a few episodes, and Jerry's got some stories, and not all of them could make it to air. It's fair to say. I think you were from a very similar era to what Jerry was around those guys as well.
Yeah, I suppose one claim to fame I've got, and I'm not sure it's probably airable because it was me that did it, but for some reason I taught them all how to snort tequila off the upturned wine glass off the bottom. God knows how that came around. I do have the odd photograph of Colin, and I'm not sure, yeah, Burnsy wasn't so good at it, but Colin could get it pouring out of his eye, which snorted with such.
Jeez.
not something I'm proud of, but there's a few of them out there that were doing it.
Wow.
I learned once, but there you go.
So when Richard moved over to the Peugeot WRC team, was that where you guys unfortunately kind of had to part ways? Is that where you stopped working with Richard then?
Actually where he lured me back, because I'd taken a bit of time out. I'd had enough of getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was kind of trying to catch up Burnsy's pile of money and failing miserably. So Robbie Head managed to claim that seat the year that Burnsy had won the world championship, and I'd done a few Beef managed to talk me into out of retirement to go and do some rallies with Marco Martin, because Marco had just signed up for, I think it was Subaru, and he said, Simon, Beef rang me up and he said, Simon, you're coming out of retirement, you're coming to do gravel nuts. Oh no, Beef, you know what we've been, please. He said, look, it's all your favourite rallies. He said, Marco's notes, they're not like Burnsy's that are like the most complicated notes on the planet. He says he only has a note every half a mile, and he says he only wants you to put anything in the notes. He didn't want all this dust here, a little bit of gravel there. He said, well, I shouldn't really, it's a bit ominous now considering what happened to Beep, but he said he only wants you to put anything in the notes that might kill him. He said, so it's the easiest job you're ever going to have. And so anyway, off we went and did that for about a year with Marco, and we had great, because it was like the Acropolis, it was Finn, it was basically rallies where you didn't need a gravel crew, and it was all sensible, 8 o'clock start in the morning, well, for them, so five o'clock or whatever for us, it wasn't too bad. So I did that for a year, and then can't remember what happened. Then when Burnsy got the drive with Peugeot, Burnsy asked me to come. Oh, that was right. He said it's all business class travel, and obviously he's now worth millions. And he said, so he'd pay me a little bit more to go and do it. He said, you don't have to travel in the back, we all go up front, because Peugeot have this company policy where if it's more than a 2-hour flight, everybody has to fly business class. So off we went tooting around the world again after a few months off.
How was that for you, obviously, going from Pro Drive, which is, I suppose, in modern terms, people today often refer to M Sport being the family team and stuff like that. I think back in those days, that's kind of the way Pro Drive was, wasn't it? And to go from that to kind of, the animal that was Peugeot Sport, what was that like?
Well, we enjoyed the business class seats. I remember that. it was nice. I'm trying to remember the name of the team manager, Ryan White.
Corrado.
Yeah, Corrado, that's him. Yeah, and he was like, I mean, he was a bit of a legend. Every morning he would come in and he would shake everybody's hands or give all the girls 3 kisses. Very a real character. But I think in a lot of ways, it wasn't massively different. I mean, all the teams are pretty professional at that level. I do remember when we went testing for the first time that all the French team, they all break out the wine at lunchtime and they all get on the wine for about an hour on a test. They don't do it on a rally, obviously. But the but when you're testing, the wine comes out every lunchtime. So there was a few cultural things. It was nice. It was great fun. It was a fun team to be part of, and still have plenty of sort of Facebook friends that are from that family.
I seem to remember, Simon, that you benefited from Burnsy's limousine of a Peugeot 607 company car as well, because he had no use for it.
Yeah, I forgot about that, yeah. Yeah, I always used to manage to snag a company car out of him somehow, because he was hardly ever in the country. And that old limo of the 607, yeah, that was a babe magnet if ever I drove it.
Is it fair to say when you transfer over and you start living that life and doing those gravel, was it easy to retire from competition yourself?
That's a good question, actually. I think by that point, I mean, I look back now and I don't regret stopping at all, but I suppose I was spoiled. And I think you're right. I think being on the World Rally Championship and kind of living the World Rally Championship through your best mate or best mates, because Colin was there as well, is, I suppose I can look back and think I've got no regrets whatsoever. And possibly if I'd not done that, I would have, you know, potentially felt differently about it. But if I look back at my last year with Peugeot driving for Des O'Dell, I had a fabulous year. I kind of won everything at the end of the year. It was only a little 1300cc, but we had a stage win in Circuit of Ireland in this little 1300, so we were on it all year. And at the end of the year, Des put all three of us in the same car, the three people that were driving for him. There was Håkan Eriksson, Chris Birkbeck, and myself, and I kind of come out on top on that particular event for one reason or another. And I kind of expected to get the number one driver Peugeot in 1990. And when Des didn't offer it me and offered me the same deal, I kind of found it pretty easy to hold my, to hang my hat up or boots up at that point. Because, well, I've done all I can do. And if that doesn't sort of warrant the number one drive, then at least I can feel happy that I've got to what I feel is the top of my game. But then when I managed to get it, like when Burnsy asked me to go and do the World Championship, just to go and see all those World Championship stages and kind of live that life through him and then see him winning the World Championship, that was probably, well, definitely a greater pleasure than anything I got out of my own career. So, yeah, I've got no regrets, and I've got just the happiest memories from it all.
Brilliant. The driving skills obviously also kind of set you up quite nicely for the next part of your life, I guess, which was the infamous gang, as I often referred it to, which was pro drivers.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's been great fun, and Ryan's benefited, if that's the right expression, from that little gang that we put together. Yeah, but it's kind of still going strong. We're in our 25th year, believe it or not, so we've been going for a long time. And now it's all, they've all got the same surname, but all the Christian names are different because it's everybody's sons now rather than the old team that I put together in those days. But again, I've always loved kind of putting talent together and kind of, I don't know, wheeling it out for some kind of business venture or whatever, or to launch a new car. But yeah, I mean, that was just, and still is. It's just great fun having a business doing something that you love with people who you love hanging out with.
The pro drivers thing was always like a bit of a thing, because obviously there was the pro drive kind of connection in that area and stuff like that. But when I was starting rallying, Ryan and I are a similar age. I think he's older than me. He looks older anyway. But obviously he was far quicker than me. But if you were a quick boy, you worked the pro drivers. And it was always one of those things that, oh, he works pro drivers, he must be good. That was kind of, it was like a benchmark of us rallying when we first started.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, we're trying to recreate that this year. We're calling the class of 2017 because we, you know, as I say, we've been going for 25 years, and we're trying to put together, because I think we kind of got out the blocks really quickly, because obviously I knew all these drivers and I'm pretty good at talking them all into coming in, let's go and do a week's work and launch a few cars around Silverstone or whatever. So it wasn't a hard sell. But we probably had as good a team then as we've ever had. And as I say, we're just trying to relaunch that sort of same level of talent that we had back then for 2017. And I think we've got it. So it's been a huge amount of fun, and hopefully will continue to be for a lot longer.
Well, you've just prompted the question there, because one thing we always talk about, you know, it's great when we talk about and we look back and everything else. There was a lot of professional drivers, even you've just been talking about your situation there with the likes of Des, and you had the Peugeot deal, albeit, you know, in the 1300-205 and things like that. There was a lot of professional drivers around, wasn't there, back in those days? Whereas today, I don't think there's as many professional drivers. There's some talented drivers, but they almost have to find the budget to show that they're talented as opposed to getting that kind of support, I guess.
Yeah, it goes through phases, I think. Again, if I go back to, like, when I retired in 1989, if you look at the manufacturer involvement in 1990 and 1991, there wasn't any. There was like two or three drives at the most. And then I come in like end of 91 or 92, there's like loads of drives. And the part of me back then thought, oh, I wish I'd just hung around like a little bit longer. But I just know at the end of 89, there was, I bet there wasn't three drives to be had in the UK, if that. And then about, as I say, 3 or 4 years later, there was, you know, kind of Renault came in and a couple of others came in, and So I kind of just think it goes through phases. Sometimes there's manufacturer involvement and they're looking for the talent, and sometimes, you know, but I mean, it does seem to me that it's become more of a money game these days, where if you've got a big checkbook, and a lot of people, there seems to be more people these days that can kind of rock up with a decent amount of money and almost buy the drive. And if it's difficult if you're the team manager, whether you're a manufacturer or not, trying to put a budget together. If somebody rocks, if you've got two drivers of a similar skill and one of them's got like a $1 million check in his hand, it's got to be difficult. So, but it does go through phases, I've found.
Absolutely, absolutely. Simon, I could talk to you all day, to be honest. I think Ryan and I should probably get you back when we possibly need to go through some stories, make sure they're okay to air, and bring you back with some more stories, if that's all right.
Yeah, well, no, I'd love to. It's just been happy reliving some of those memories. Yeah, but if we censor them before we go on air, I'm sure we can dig some out of the archives.
That would be great. That would be great, folks. We're going to go to a little break. We're going to thank Simon for joining us on Absolute Rally this week. We're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back with the guys from the AIA Rally Championship over in the States, who's going to be talking to us about the Olympus Rally.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. The Supercar and Rally Show blasts into Bangor-on-Dee Racecourse on Sunday the 18th of June. On-track action, displays and fun for all the family this Father's Day weekend. Tickets on sale through www.tsars.org. The Supercar and Rally Show, Bangor-on-Dee Racecourse, Sunday the 18th of June. We'll see you there. This is Absolute Rally.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Absolute Rally. And as I say, we've been talking to the guys at the American Rally Association, obviously only the other week, and we're keenly following the championship. Travis, of course, is back there, and obviously we've got UK guys, David Higgins and Craig Drew, and it's just got a whole new life breathed into it. And one of the people who was involved with that and kind of get it going again was, again, I wanted to get his title right. He's just played it down saying he's the championship manager, but his official title is competition director of the American Rally Association. So Eric Nelson, welcome to Absolute Rally for the first time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be able to discuss some of the new things we're doing here and actually some of the things we're planning for next year already.
Well, let's go, because I know a little bit about that. We're going to talk about that in a second, but we've just come off the back of a very, very exciting Olympus Rally, haven't we?
Yeah, it was a great event. The, you know, typical Pacific Northwest in the U.S., it just poured rain almost the entire rally. But you know what? That made it really, really interesting for some of the U.K. guys, but for even the U.S. guys that are used to it, too. So,
with regards to, obviously, you know, it's a Subaru lockout again. We know that is, and we tend to feel that it's always going to be, you know, one or the other. But you know, you've got a lot of local guys now that are kind of just biding the time and just clipping the heels. And obviously, some of the rules that have been brought in are designed to perhaps try and level things out, haven't they?
Well, that's exactly right. We, you know, one of the goals we had with our 2017 rules was to try to get that field condensed a little bit more. So we did things with the big guys, with David and Travis, of limiting their tires, adding a little bit more weight to the car. And, you know, the gaps have been getting closer. But I think part of that has to do with, we're really excited. We have Barry McKenna over here for the whole series with a new to us WRC S2000 turbo car. And that thing's that's just a monster. We love it.
It's the Fiesta, so it's an M Sport chassis, isn't it? Which is, I think, a Super 2000 chassis with a wheel rally car engine in it.
It is. I keep meaning to ask Barry what actually is in it for an engine. I think it's a World Rally turbos of some kind engine. So
I think it's I think it's one of the older World Car engines. By all means, anyone put it straight, but I think it's the 2 liter World, it's the 2 liter World Rally Car engine that would have been in the kind of the Focuses and stuff like that. And it's been put into a Super 2000 chassis, so it's got all the nice, clever handling characteristics of a Super 2 car with the grunt of a World Rally Car from a couple of years back. So that we had one or two of those running over here in the UK, and they're a proper bit of kit. They're a proper bit of kit. And it's nice for you guys, I guess, to see something a little bit different as well.
Well, you know, I love seeing the Subarus. You know, I know Travis and Robbie and David and Craig real well, but yeah, even they love to see something a little bit different. So a more WRC style car, it's just great. And then of course we have our restricted open class, which is the next step down, and we're getting new body style Subarus, we're getting Mitsubishis from the US here, and it's great seeing these guys getting a little bit closer.
Now, with regards to the series, you guys, and I spoke to Chris about this only a few weeks ago, new broom, new direction of the championship. We're now two events in, of course. The feeling from the competitors, what's the feedback? What type of things are being said?
You know, the biggest feedback we've been getting lately is in terms of just our accessibility and our public face to the events. So, you know, we've put a lot of effort into our marketing. So I know you guys talked about the app a little bit, but the reception of our app is just a fantastic. We are so, so happy with that. And it's allowed people at home all over the world and really at the events to not just know where the times are, but also know exactly where the cars are. It's no more standing at your spectator location and going, well, okay, they were supposed to start 5 minutes ago. You can look on the app and see, oh, they're two corners away. And that's just been a huge thing. And I think that's where most of our, most of our positive interactions have been coming from.
Do you think it's a generation thing as well? Even here in the UK, where we kind of consider ourselves perhaps the home of rallying in many ways, there's still vast quantities of people who don't quite understand the concept of what rallies are sometimes. You know, they'll go out and they'll watch it and things like that, and they don't really understand what's going on. And you know, I must admit that our big problem here in the UK is where lots of rallies are run, you don't get good phone signal in order to have the app or to be able to go on the internet and check these things. Is that something that you guys looked into as well? You know, the generation, and also, you know, the generations now that use smartphones all the time?
Well, and that's definitely something. I mean, I have a little bit of a marketing background. So, you know, the most people nowadays get their information on mobile. You know, we all still use the computers, but, you know, day to day, you know, the quick information, it's all done on our phones. And, you know, you're exactly right when you ask about, how are people going to get that information when the cell signal is bad? And we have some areas in our events that are like that too, and very, very much so. So that's even something we saw at Olympus this last weekend.
I was just not at all. I was fascinated to know, you know, what your guys' thoughts were on this, to be honest with you, with regards to, because I'm a big, you know, I love technology, and I think the only way for our sport to grow is to embrace this type of stuff. I think what you guys have done as a national championship, I think, is phenomenal. You know, I wish we had championships, you know, over here that perhaps have maybe invested in this, you know, themselves.
Well, you know, one of the biggest things we really tried to do was look at, you know, what do people want to see? Well, they want to see the scores. We found that they want to be able to know where the cars are. But what we found the most success with is live video. So we're going to run into challenges at some events being able to get those videos out. But just as we evolve, we've been putting out schedules saying we're going to be live at this time, this time, this time. And it's really, really helped us quite a bit. People know exactly what's going on. They get little bits of information right when the guys roll into service. And, you know, that's one of the things we have to keep doing. We're educating ourselves. We're also trying to educate our fan base to, you know, what's going on and how it all works, and you know, really what's going to work best is going to be different at every rally, and we're just going to keep trying to find the best things to do.
So Olympus was a win for David Higgins. It's one of those historic events. Now it's scary to even think about this, but you're halfway through your season now.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. We are. We have in about 2.5 weeks, we have one in Pennsylvania. And then we go about 6 weeks before our New England. And then our the end of our series is at the end of August in Minnesota. So, yeah, we really are. We're halfway done with this. But you know what? We're already looking to 2018 to see what events can we add, if any, and, you know, how can we make this series better and keep growing.
Now, one thing which I know you guys have been quite passionate about, and the guys at Team O'Neill as well, of course, because they've been heavily involved, of course, in ARA, is young drivers and trying to get young drivers involved in the sport. And I think there's certainly some movement with regards to that, isn't there, for 2018?
There really is. Yeah. Actually, on on the young driver front, we've tried to do a little bit of research and what can we do to try to get not only our current younger competitors, you know, keep them interested and try to educate them. But at the same time, we want to try to bring in new people. And one of the things we wanted to try to do was start something specifically for the younger driver. And that will actually be announced this week. So we will have for 2018 a junior championship sponsored by DMAC.
Wow. Now, I've been fortunate enough, I've actually seen the regs, the draft regs for this already.
Excellent,
which is great because I come from a competing background, so I'm used to looking at championship regulations and stuff like that. And there's some great stuff. I want to ask you where you got some of the inspiration from for some of these things with regards to points availability, stage wins. Your juniors are going to get a point for that. Vehicle appearance and preparation, 0 to 2 points available for vehicle presentation when it's presented at scrutineering, vehicle appearance, cleanliness inside and out, interesting and well-designed livery. Where's that idea come from?
Well, part of it came from, you know, the actual watching and seeing what has worked in the WRC and what's worked for the DMAC shootout. But a lot of it came from our own marketing backgrounds too. It's, you know, you see cars come into scrutineering and, you know, they have zip ties holding the bumpers on and, you know, the livery's half rubbed off from the last event. And you see what, you know, how the tech people looking at the cars, you know, they'll look at them a little bit closer. And then you see David's car roll in and it looks perfect. You see Barry McKenna's car roll in and it looks perfect. And all of a sudden, that's where all the interest goes to. It made us realize these are things that people want. If we want to be able to talk about our competitors and talk about a new championship and talk about a new series, not only do they have to be interesting, but they have to look good. It sounds awful, but that's the way our world is now. If it doesn't look good, people aren't going to pay attention. No. And that's also that's one of the other things we want to do too, is we're going to be giving points for how they promote themselves. So before the events, if our junior championship contestants are online talking about the next event, how the last event went, their preparation, that's things that we're going to be able to award points for. But at the same time, we've started to do press conferences. We're going to have specific press conferences just for our junior participants. And if they're going through and they don't know their answers, they don't know who their sponsors are, things like that, they're not going to get points. And these are things that we're going to help with. We have already started talking to competitors and, you know, professionals about teaching these guys how to do it correctly.
Okay. I think, you know, that's a really, really good thing. That's a really, really good thing. I've done a little bit with young drivers. I presented British Rallycross over here for 2 years. So I used to do quite a lot with young drivers in the junior sections of there. And I always used to say to them, imagine you're having a conversation and just remember you're not reading from a billboard of just your sponsors. Subtly put them in. Don't just read it off like a telephone directory, because people will switch off. It's got to be almost like a subliminal message. So you know what? That's a really, really good idea. I love that idea. I really, really do.
Yeah, we've all seen it done badly, so we know it doesn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, obviously, DMAC are very, very, very active at the moment with regards to, obviously, the Junior World Rally Championship, and they're doing some great things at the moment in the World Rally Championship over here in the UK and the British Rally Championship and in various parts of the world. How much influence have the guys at DMAC had on the drafting of how the championship's going to work?
Well, so starting back at Rally Mexico, we sent a couple people from ARA down with one of our American competitors. But at the same time, they wanted to present this to DMAC and have them look through it, make some recommendations. And actually, they didn't really have that much. They didn't really request changes. They looked at it. They really, really liked it. They were on board. They're kind of, you know, everybody I've talked to over the last few weeks, you know, maybe a month ago now, have kind of been on the same thing, the same plane. They really like what we're trying to do. And don't, thankfully for us, they don't have a whole lot of comments other than when can we get started? Please. So yeah, we're really, really excited for this, and you know, we haven't even gone over what people can win from it either.
Now, one thing I wanted to come to, obviously, we, you know, when we talk about Junior World Rally Championship and some of the other championships around the world, they've been a single make to go alongside right. the single make tire. What are you guys doing with regards to cars and builds and regulations, and how you're going to kind of, you know, have a level playing field?
So a couple things. We're actually going to start a new class that will be for the Junior Championship only. So currently in two-wheel drive, we have a open two-wheel drive and a production two-wheel drive. We are going to be adding one in the middle, a restricted open two-wheel drive. It is specifically for the Junior Champions. So what it is it's not going to be the full sequential transmissions, you know, the really big, higher horsepower two-wheel drive cars, a little bit pared back, try to keep that cost down a little bit for people running this entire series. But at the same time, it's going to be a little more interesting than those production cars. So you'll be able to make some changes to the vehicles, which is ultimately what people really want. And it'll get that excitement level up there a little bit. Now, the other thing is there is no, like you're kind of asking there is no one make. You can run any two-wheel drive car you want, as long as it's 6 years old or newer. And of course, there's some stipulations to the actual build of the cars, but it's actually not all that restrictive, unless you're trying to build a really, really high horsepower car. Very, very simple. The idea is to try to keep them as close as we possibly can, without being overly restrictive. So. The tires will be specified by DMAC. You'll only get 8 per event, but you know, you could run a Fiesta, of course. You could run, the Subaru BRZ. You could go run a Toyota Corolla. It's, you know, whatever suits you best.
So it could be front or rear wheel drive as well. Because I'm just thinking now, what could you do, you know, a bit different? You know, I'm thinking an MX-5. You know, someone brave going rear wheel drive, because everybody loves rear wheel drive. You know, big sideways action and stuff like that. You know, there's something that's two wheel drive as well. So really, you've just the cars you've just described there. I must admit, I thought you were going to say, well, you know, it had to be 1600 and naturally aspirated, and that was it. It is literally just two wheel drive then.
Yeah, there's a few other restrictions, and some of those details are, and the reason I'm being a little vague, some of those details are still a little bit in the works. But yeah, front wheel, rear wheel drive, they can be turbocharged. There's a lot of different possibilities there without going too extreme on the car. You know, the restrictions for this championship really come in the marketing of yourself and the age, really. So that's one of the things we really struggled with. We wanted to make sure that anybody entering this championship hadn't already been winning events, whether it's WRC or, you know, British national events or anything over here. But at the same time, we wanted to keep that age down. So anybody entering this has to be 28 years or younger as of January 1st next year, because this is a 2018 championship, of course.
Of course it is. Well, listen, Eric, thank you so much, not only for kind of walking us through the Olympus and the intrepid weather that you no doubt you guys have to stand out in, and obviously let us know who won the event and what's going on, obviously, but announcing this junior championship as well. And if our listeners, we do have listeners in it all over the world, but we do have a strong listenership over in the States and Canada. What's the best way of checking out this for more information?
Well, the best thing to do, what we update most often, is our Facebook page. Okay. So that's just obviously go onto Facebook, search for American Rally Association. We do have our website. That stuff gets updated, but you know, the most dynamic content will be on Facebook. And when this gets announced this week, you'll have all the first place prize, which is of course the big one. So all the details will be out there that we have at the moment.
Fantastic. Listen, Eric, thank you so much for joining us on Absolute Rally this week. And please come back, you know, again soon and let us know what's going on.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Fantastic. Eric Nelson from the American Rally Association there joining us. Folks, we're going to go to a little break, and a man who's been competing a little bit over in the States of late, co-driver Niall Burns, is going to be joining us for the final section of Absolute Rally this week.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And I do try to keep a little bit of a theme that runs through the programmes. Some of you may spot it, some of you may not, and some of you may think I'm making this up. That's a fair comment. The reason why I've left this one to last is because Niall Burns, who's a co-driver. And the reason why I want to get Niall on, Niall has actually been on the programme before, and I'm sure you're already starting to see his name appear on more and more entry lists all over Europe, it feels like, and even in America. Obviously, we've been talking about the American Rally Association Championship already in this season's podcast. So it seemed a really good time to get someone like Niall on, who seems to be doing more championships than exist almost. So welcome back for, must be well over 12 months. Niall Burns, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hi Tony, how's things? Yeah, great to be back on. I think it is actually roughly 12 months since I was last speaking to you, yeah, so good to be back on.
So 12 months, as I say, the reason why I wanted to talk to you is we had Dan Barrett on the other week talking about hard work and co-drivers, and then it was just kind of after that program, I just kind of spotted a few kind of social media posts from yourself of where you are. You know, 1 minute, you know, you're out doing an American Rally Association event, and then the next minute I see you in the British Rally Championship, and then the next minute I see you with the Abu Dhabi Junior team. Just how many seats do you have this year before we go any further?
Yeah, that's a good question. That seems to change every week, but at the minute I'm pretty focused on three different programs this year with Matthew Kaufman in the American Rally Championship, working with James Slaughter in the British Championship, and I'm working with Mohammed, obviously, with the Abu Dhabi Junior program. So there are my three main seats for this season.
Now, I guess the question that is always asked is, how I've known you for quite a while, and I've seen you kind of work your way up and stuff like that, but how do you kind of fill your diary? You know, it gets to January, and, you know, I've got, you know, good mates, you know, Craig Parry is a good mate of mine, and, you know, I've often had this conversation with him over the last few years. You know, what happens when you get to kind of autosport and your diary's blank, and, you know, it's how you earn your living and everything else? Just walk us through perhaps a little bit of what happened, you know, January 2017 for you. You know, how did you start planning?
January 2017 was very worrying time for me, actually, because, as you say, the diary was blank and I didn't know how things was going to go. But it was actually a good friend of mine, Trevor Agnew, who is a friend of the show as well, I believe. I was working with him quite a bit, and he always just told me, don't panic, you know, things always turn around. And it's just through contacts with him. Then I got speaking with Chris Patterson, and then I got speaking with a few other guys, and I just started mentioning, you know, that my diary was fairly empty. And next thing, all of a sudden, come the end of February, the diary just filled up very quickly. So, you know, it was very fortunate now, but I'm glad it went that way now, to be honest, because I was looking at maybe taking 2017 off completely. You know, it was actually that worrying at one stage, you know.
Wow. Now, there seems to be there's a strong Irish connection with the American rallying. Martin Brady's been going there for quite some time, and various other people have gone back and forth over the last 15, 20 years in its various guises. How did you get an opportunity over in the States?
Well, it was back in 2014. A good friend of mine, Paddy Robinson, was actually competing on different rallies out there. And it was LSPR 2014. A call came that Belgian driver David Starks was looking for a co-driver. And Paddy just messaged me, look, do you want a break in America, but you need to go within 24 hours. So it was literally just drop everything and go. So it was just a big chance. But fortunately now I've done over 14, 15 rallies in America since. So it definitely paid off for me, you know.
Fantastic. Now, you mentioned before, obviously, sitting with James Slaughter. He was out doing a historic event on the Plains Rally, National Rally over here in the UK last weekend. Are you guys out this coming weekend on the Scottish?
No, unfortunately, we're not making the trip to Dumfries. James has work commitments, but we're planning to be back for an Ypres rally in June, all going well.
Wow. Is Ypres one that you've done before?
No, Aper is one I actually haven't done before now. That's what I'm pretty much doing today, is I'm looking at maps from previous years and trying to get recce schedules and stuff together. So I'm just doing my actual homework in Aper today, but it's such an iconic event and I'm really looking forward to it. You know, it's a very challenging event on the co-driver as well, so I can't wait to get over there.
It's one of those events, you know, where Chris Ingram on last week, and it's not a round of ERC for him this year, but he's still desperate to kind of go there. It does, there's certain events that have this kind of pull, don't they? You know, they don't, it doesn't matter whether they're part of a championship almost, but you still want to go and do them, and Ypres definitely falls into that category.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, you know, the stages are iconic. The reputation of the rally goes before, on being one of the toughest tarmac rallies in Europe, and it's been on my list for quite a while to do so. The fact now I'm getting to do it and just start my preparations early, because I want to be make sure I'm at my best for it, you know, and my preparation is 100%, because I think that is key for the likes of the bigger events there. And I'm after coming off the back of another tough rally Antibes down the south of France, so I think I'm in the right frame of mind and have the right preparation there to go ahead and go do it, you know.
Rally Antibes, we touched upon that last week. We had Sarah Williams on, who was doing the Clio R3T trophy over there. How was the rally, by the way? Because again, we'll be talking about it at the top of the program. Ryan and I spoke about it a little bit last week. What was the rally like?
It was a fantastic rally. It was a very tough event now, I have to say, because obviously with myself and Mohammed, it was our first event together, and we were working on pace notes, and we were thrown into 25-kilometer stages, taking in classics like the Turini, Nicole Labrosse, and it was a very tough event to kind of get a, you know, relationship going, driver, co-driver for pace notes. But, you know, very good experience, fantastic stages, and I think it's probably one of the best tarmac rallies I've ever done. And definitely, even for yourself, Tony, you definitely have got to get the Fiesta over there at some point.
she's
weekend out for you and Jamie Edwards.
Yeah, she's feeling a bit sorry for herself at the moment, to be fair, but still, there you go. That's a different conversation for a different day. But there you go. So it's exciting times for you. Obviously, the dream is to get to the highest level. That's what you're aiming to do. And, you know, we've made reference to this before, you know, Brits and Irish co-drivers are very, very much sought after in WRC. Have you already perhaps started to talk to people in WRC, or do you not quite feel ready for that particular step just yet?
Oh, no, I do feel ready, but I suppose, like, I'm committed to a program at the minute, you know, three programs, and that's my main focus, you know, so I'm putting all my attention into this at the minute. And then come the off-season, you know, I'd definitely be interested in speaking about maybe opportunities in WRC for next year, possibly, you know, but no, as I, you know, that's the exact end goal where I want to be. I do feel I'm ready to make that step up, but I'd like to make that step up, you know, with the driver I'm working with now, and hopefully, you know, come the end of the year, we can discuss for next year, and hopefully that can happen.
Fantastic. Well, listen, stay in touch. Don't be a stranger. Don't be away from us this long again, okay?
I definitely won't be. No, I'll definitely stay in touch. We'll have to get you with Donegal coming up, Tony. Will I see you on the entry list this year?
Oh, I don't see it. As much as I'd love to do it, mate. As much as, you know what, you talk about iconic events, and we were talking, of course, about Ypres before. Donegal is one of those events which definitely bristles the hairs on the back of my neck. It's definitely got that one that it's a box ticking exercise, and it's definitely a bucket list event. Maybe not this year, but you never know next year. So we're working on a couple of things.
I'll provisionally put you on the books for Donegal next year.
What have I taught myself into? There you go. Listen, Niall, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, that was Niall Burns. This has been episode 6 of season 8. I hope you're enjoying the series. We've got a few more bits and pieces coming up before we call time on this particular season. But you know where we live. It's @Absolute_Rally, of course, on Twitter. And, of course, you can go on via the website these days as well, which is absoluterally.co.uk. And you can listen to old episodes. You can drop us messages and things like that. But, again, thanks for the download. We'll be back same time, same place, in your podcast hole next week.